From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Friday, November 7th. Coming up, we'll bring you a conversation with Robert Moore, Central Illinois' first Black U.S. Marshal. Moore shares details on his journey through the Illinois State Police and how he fought for civil rights within the realm of law enforcement. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to pay full SNAP benefits by today. As IPM's Emily Hayes reports, families in Champaign are anxiously waiting for help.
Both Tashiana Brown and her husband work for Amazon Flex and UPS. But the cost of groceries for her household of seven is equal to their rent. Normally, SNAP covers that cost. This week, the money hasn't come because of the government shutdown.
It's just been a roller coaster, just not knowing when, you know, not having that safety net, I guess. So I'm hoping that everything works out and ends soon.
Brown has been picking up food from her kids' schools and local food pantries. She says she doesn't want to be picky, but what's available doesn't always fit their tastes or needs. For example, no one in the family likes bologna. I'm Emily Hayes with IPM News.
Chicago area commuters may soon see the impacts of a massive transit deal that is awaiting Governor J.B. Pritzker's signature. State lawmakers passed the sweeping legislation last week. It would raise Chicagoland sales tax and tollway fees and create an agency to coordinate fares and services among Metra, PACE, and the CTA. Sun-Times reporter David Struitt says the three agencies will now interact in a way they hadn't before.
So you'll be able to transfer from a Metra train to the CTA train without buying a new ticket, which you can't do now under most circumstances. This was a big aim of the lawmakers who made the bill.
Riders will not see their fare go up. Lawmakers say the plan will bring $1.5 billion in additional revenue to Chicagoland Transit. The book If All the Sky Were Paper will be brought to life on stage in Urbana starting tonight. The play portrays real-life stories of veterans through war letters. IPM Student Newsroom's Anna Koh has more.
The author, Andrew Carroll, traveled across the globe collecting wartime letters, exchanged between soldiers and their loved ones back home. Director Marshawn Bingham says war is often portrayed as glamorous, but the play by Twin City Theater Company reveals the harsh realities.
Oh, we'll pay for college for you. You'll be set for life. You'll get money. All those positive things. But yet they're not talking about how, like, you may come home with PTSD. The life that you once knew is not going to be the same.
Bingham says the play helped him gain new respect for soldiers who are willing to sacrifice their lives for their country. If All the Sky Were Paper will run at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center from November 7th through the 16th. I'm Anna Koh, IPM News.
The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is making several administrative changes that includes renaming its Office for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. In an email to students and staff, Chancellor Charles Isbell said the Office for DEI Initiatives would be called the Office of the Vice Chancellor for Access, Civil Rights, and Community starting in 2026. The university previously said it was revising DEI policies to emphasize that programs are open to all. Isbell says the name and structure of the office is changing, but its mission will not. President Trump has called DEI illegal and discriminatory for focusing on race and racism. He is putting new pressure on universities to align with his vision to get funding. Some of those efforts have been blocked in court. Still to come, we'll bring you a conversation with Robert Moore, Central Illinois' first Black U.S. Marshal. That story is coming up next on 217 Today. But first, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for partly cloudy skies with a high of 69 degrees, with a west wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies with a low of 39 degrees, a west wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain late in the day and a high of 60 degrees, a southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of rain and a low of 33 degrees, northwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusting to 30 miles per hour. And for Sunday, partly cloudy and colder with a high of 39 degrees, with a northwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour.
Next time on The 21st Show, Lee Hawkins is a journalist, podcast producer, and Pulitzer Prize finalist. He's also the author of I Am Nobody's Slave, How Uncovering My Family's History Set Me Free. It's a memoir of his family's journey across 400 years of enslavement, Jim Crow, and beyond. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. Robert Moore's journey has taken him from the cotton fields of Mississippi to the highest levels of law enforcement. He describes himself as a farm boy who made it out of a small town to find a greater purpose and devote himself to fight for civil rights. Moore graduated from the University of Illinois Springfield and served with the Illinois State Police. He later returned to Mississippi and was appointed to be Central Illinois' first Black United States Marshal. Moore now lives in Springfield and has written a new book about his journey. IPM's Kennedy Vincent spoke with Moore about his autobiography, Off My Neck. She starts by asking what the book's title means to him.
I want readers to understand one perfect thing. The book is about not only about me, it's about them also. Because each reader has something on their neck that they could get off. The thing that was on my neck, what I was referring to is leaving Mississippi to get the racism and the yoke that the ceiling, not the glass ceiling that women talk about, but there was a ceiling also for Black men that you couldn't come up through the system in a normal way. And so I needed to get all of that off of my neck. Because I knew my potential. I really did. I always felt that I was going to be an important aspect in society. I felt that my training, my temperament would allow me to move through the system, but I had to get these things off of my neck. I got convinced that my story borders on basically getting things off of my neck, like being in segregation, the Jim Crow laws and all that. And if I got that off my neck and moved into Illinois, but what I found out that moving to Illinois, that there was still racism.
Yes.
I not that I was shocked, but I felt that the racism, it wasn't quite as pervasive as it was in Mississippi, because the legislature enforced segregation in Mississippi. It wasn't so. It was an individual stuff up here in Illinois. So I was able to look at that, but if you get things off your neck, regardless whether it's alcohol, drugs, or sedatives, those things that are on your neck, if you get those things off your neck, you might be able to rise to the level of where God has your purpose in life.
Can you talk about what the front lines of justice really means in your context, and what were those front lines throughout your whole career, if you could sum that up?
Yes. Coming out of Algoma, there's a little town of 300 and dirt roads and cotton fields and cotton gins, of which I used to run up and down, walk to church and ride to the wagon in church. But to move from that environment to the front lines of justice, what I mean, moving into the law enforcement arena and moving to the level of which I became, moving to a deputy chief of police in Savannah, Georgia, chief of detectives, moving to the quarters of Illinois as a U.S. Marshal and running that entire 46 county, then moving back to Mississippi to run the largest police department in the state of Mississippi. Those are the halls of justice. That's where justice began, because we have so much contact with our citizens out there. And justice is, we have to help regulate that justice. Specifically, I call the Hall of Justice where you're appointed by the President of the United States, where you are at the highest level of government in the federal government and the halls of justice. And I encourage my readers to read the book to understand how it is that they can benefit from understanding the law. Mm-hmm. And there are sections in my book where I have did some research before that I included in the book, in terms of how to build trust between the police and the Black community. And as one, I got in there on terms of how to act when stopped by the police.
You mentioned being trained by Illinois State Police to become a civil rights advocate. And this seems unusual for that era. Can you explain how that came about and what did this training really entail and how did it differ from the standard police training?
Well, it was fascinating, to be honest with you. And I didn't know it at the time, but what it entails for training to be affirmative action officer, you had to know the law, you had to understand civil rights movement, you had to understand, you had to become an advocate for the organization in which you were being hired for. And so as I began to the role that I was brought into as the affirmative action officer, I had to get trained. And one of the things that is an anecdotal thing that I always say, my supervisor, who was a lieutenant, he came to me and said, "Do you want to go to the Black Law Enforcement Executive Conference in Louisville, Kentucky?" And I asked the question of, "Who's going to pay for it?" I asked that silly question rather than saying, "Yes, I want to go." I'm asking the question of who's going to pay for it. And but so that was one of the anecdotal things that I will always remember in that conversation. But I was sent to the Black Law Enforcement Conference in Louisville, Kentucky. I never will forget that. And I had never heard of a Black law enforcement group out there training folks, but they had been in place for a while, and my white supervisors knew about them. So that's how my training started, by sending me to these Black law enforcement conferences. And the next year I went to New Orleans, and next thing I know I'm heading all over the place. And so I credit the Illinois State Police by training me as a civil rights worker, as well as a law enforcement officer. Move up through the system, other organizations, they called upon my experience that I gained through that process in order to benefit them also.
Fast forward a little bit in your career. You were appointed U.S. Marshal by President Bill Clinton on October 11th, 1994. Can you describe that moment you received the call or the news? What did this appointment mean to you personally?
Oh, that was the highlight of my career.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why. Carol Mose LeBron, Senator Mose LeBron, she was, and her Senator Paul Simon had made my recommendation to the president from Illinois to become the U.S. Marshal. And there were things that happened, obstacles that in the boulders that were thrown at me, all the sexual harassment charges that were put in my way and falsely accused me of those things. And so we had to walk through that. And Senator Casmore LeBron guided my nomination through those obstacles. And the night that I never will forget, the night she called me from the Senate floor to tell me that that my nomination had been approved by the full Senate, and it was almost impossible for me to explain what it felt like, but I can share with you that in addition to the joy, I felt the weight of the fact that I was going to have to be and performing again and running an organization. Running an organization at the federal government level, which I knew nothing about. And so, but I was excited, and it's just joyful enough, the fact that how many people I say had reached that level of being appointed by the president of the United States to run a district in the state of Illinois. So it was ecstatic. It's better words. It was ecstatic, astounding, and nauseous.
That was IPM's Kennedy Vincent speaking with Springfield resident Robert Moore about his new book, Off My Neck. You can hear the full conversation on Dialogue tomorrow, Saturday at 11 a.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1 or this week on the Illinois Public Media YouTube channel. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Oriana. Reporting today contributed by Emily Hayes, Kennedy Vincent, Mawa Iqbal, Anna Koh, and Arjun Tucker. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.